Alright, ready to do this?
How we feeling?
Let's do this.
Everybody ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Feeling snappy?
Yay.
Alright, I'm gonna kick it off. Yo, nerd up! Welcome to Nerd AF, a weekly pop nerd culture podcast from F420. I'm Brad, and I'm driving the show this week with Hugh Johnson and Richard Williams. And we are joined this week by Janae Burris of Pussy Bros Comedy. And they are an amazing comedy troupe. You got to check them out. All amazing comics. And Janae herself is hosting a Tuesday mic open mic at Oscar Blues Brewery here in Denver. So make sure you go check out Janae. She's hilarious, and you're about to hear a lot about from her on this episode. So we're going to just go right into it. On the board to discuss for this episode, we've got a number of different topics. We're going to start with introductions, this being our first episode, so you can get to know a little bit about us and the different hosts. So let's go ahead and start with you, Hugh. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience?
Hey, what's up? My name is Hugh Johnson. I am a gamer. I'm all things video games. Been playing my whole life, pretty much. Lifelong favorite titles are like Halo, Kingdom Hearts, Dragon Age. Currently playing Smite, Overwatch, Destiny 2, waiting for Sea of Thieves. So that's cool. Also love tabletop gaming. Got into that RPG stuff, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, back in college. Just really love everything games. And now I'm also interested in how nerd culture intersects with social issues. I'm trying to become a woke Jedi. So that's my goal.
Nice.
That's me.
Awesome. Richard.
Yes. My name is Richard Williams. Let's see. I'm a little bit too honest. I'm a little bit too forthright. And I am a gay nerd of color. And yes. I collect comic books. I've been doing it since I was 7 years old. I play PS4 games, collect action figures, and Blu-rays. Lover of all things horror, especially independent horror. That's like my niche, and I really, really love it. Sci-fi and fantasy. And I guess that's basically me. I've got like useless knowledge in my head, man. So I want to like talk to you about it. So
yep. So I'm your other host, Brad Bogus. I'm kind of just like a general all around nerd. I myself really love theater and Shakespeare, but particularly the things about nerd culture that really interest me are how they intersect with pop culture and politics and social issues. And sort of like where nerd culture starts to influence the world we live in, mm-hmm. which I think is really interesting. And it touches kind of everything. I like playing video games. I like tabletop games. I like reading books. I like, you know, movies. I like pretty much everything about nerdism. Mm-hmm. And I like to just dive down rabbit holes and learn as much as I possibly fucking can about them. So that's what I'm going to be here, is sort of like your middle of the road voice amongst the hosts. And then now we got our guest, Janae Burris. Janae, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, man. Well, you already introduced me, right? I'm Janae Burris. I'm a comedian. And
tell us about what makes you a nerd.
Well, you know, I don't know, man. I'm pretty cool, so it's hard.
Are we fucking up your reputation?
I've been trying to relate.
I'm a cool nerd.
I've been trying to relate more to nerds, and what I guess what I see it's like, you know, you care a lot about something. Mm-hmm. It's like you could nerd out about whatever. So on that level, although I'm pretty cool.
I know you nerd out with me on some Shakespeare, though. So.
Yes, uh-oh. I will. I will. I loved listening to your intros already. I was like, oh, man, okay. Okay.
Right on. All
right, these are real nerds right here. Okay. All right, cool.
Well, let's start talking about some topics, specifically nerd issues on these topics. Last night we had the Oscars. I personally did not watch the Oscars, but I watched pretty much everything that was a movie on the nomination list. Mm-hmm. Some of the better nerd titles that were out there, we had Blade Runner, mm-hmm. we had Get Out, we had Shape of Water. What was our favorite nerd movie, you think? Hugh, what was your favorite nerd movie?
I gotta say Get Out, because that's the only one I've seen. I'm a new father. I probably should have said that. I ain't really seeing movies on the regular anymore. But yeah, Get Out was a great movie.
Goodness. Get Out, definitely. But I love The Shape of Water. It yeah. was just, my God, it was absolutely just beautiful how it was shot. I also know American Sign Language, so it was really refreshing to see the lead in The Shape of Water, and she was mute, and to see her sign, and I was just like, oh my god, I forgot some of this stuff, because I don't use it every day, but both of those movies, they were my favorite, and if one of them would have won, I was happy.
I like how nonchalantly Shape of Water is just like, let's just have some interspecies sexual relationship. We're just going to do that. They just do that.
Like, and then they're explaining
it's hard
in the
to
movie.
Find a man out there. Damn. You know, right. You got to start changing your expectations right.
Yeah,
a little bit.
A
like, you know
god.
What?
Right.
You know what?
I love it. This fish god loves me. It's like this. You'll have you know to say, what? Oh, you mute. That's all
right. That's right.
What is it Kimmel said last night? You know, things got so bad in Hollywood, women started having sex with fish. Like,
hey, yeah. I mean, it seems to be that.
Right?
That seems to be the
oh
case.
My god.
You know, the,
oh
Casey
my god.
Affleck didn't get to present the best supporting actor role this year because of sexual allegations. He was missing from the Oscars, mm-hmm. and instead they had I didn't watch the Oscars, so I can't even tell you the two women who presented that, but
I
it
did.
Was who was it that presented that?
I don't remember.
it was I think it was Uma Thurman and Selma Hayek, maybe that did
there
it
was
in her place.
Three. I think there was
yeah
three women.
Anyway
it
that,
was
that was
Hayek.
Pretty
she
notable
was
considering
them.
The fact
yeah.
that like you know now we have to go to fish monsters because you know, all the men are dropping out.
Right.
They fucked up, and now they're gone. They've been erased.
Ah, we will replace you.
Yeah, right.
Please.
They are real men now.
Shout out to Jordan Peele real quick.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Absolutely.
Get Out. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I mean, not to skip over Get Out, because that was literally my favorite movie, I think, of last year. And
yeah,
I
didn't see many of the movies. I mean, this happens every year, especially if you don't know anybody with screeners. Y'all got screeners or what?
No.
I
okay.
go to Alamo Draft House here in Denver. Yeah.
What were the movies? Get Out, which seems like
three
forever
billboards,
ago.
Shape of Water.
What was it? Dunkirk?
Like eight of them.
Dunkirk.
Up, yep.
Yeah, there was a fuck ton of them. There was a lot of them. Maybe there's as many as every
what's
year.
What's the other one? Gary Oldman, he won...
Finest
Darkness?
Darkest Hour. And then, what's the other one? Lady Bird,
that's right.
Those were...
Was I Tanya nominated?
For
Best Picture, I don't think so.
I know
she was nominated for Best Actress.
I did see that one. I loved it.
Yeah, that was great. That was really good. But, no, Get Out was amazing. And I think, like, you know, Shape of Water was a really good movie. I don't know if I would say it was better than Get Out in any stretch of the imagination.
I don't think so.
Get Out was really unique. And not only unique, but like layered in a way that movies rarely ever get.
Right.
And like that's kind of what you would expect from like a nerd leader like Jordan Peele. I mean, the dude is kind of a nerd icon. And
he is.
And when he came out with that movie, that just like jaw dropped, I think, so many people.
Right.
I remember when I saw it in the theater, I literally was drinking a beer. And there was this one point that was so awkward and funny. I literally did, for the first time in my life, an actual spit take on the back of a dude's head. It was a bald dude.
Cool.
He had shaved his head, and he was on a date.
No!
Richard was with me.
Ladies and gentlemen, I was there. This shit true.
No movie's ever done that.
Like, please
so
not beat my
I'm
friend.
Thinking if Get Out can affect me like that, that's a good-ass movie.
Wow. Yeah, that movie, it affected me so much.
Yeah.
Like my friend hasn't seen it yet, and I want to sit and watch it with him, except that I keep remembering how affected I was by it. I was like, I don't know if I want to go back there.
Right.
Who did you see it with?
I saw it with Richard and with my wife, Stephanie.
With Richard and your wife.
Yeah.
Did you guys have a similar experience watching? Were you guys reacting to
I gotta give
things?
It up to Brad and Stephanie. Well, Brad, we went to college together, so he's always been like our honorary black man in college. So you and Scott Edwards. But yeah, I mean, you were like everything I was laughing at that was like African American, whatever, y'all were laughing at. But I looked and I saw like other Caucasian people and they were just like, should I laugh?
Kind of missing it.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God, will I be attacked if I laugh? Or like not laugh. I was like, sure, whatever. But
yeah, if you grow up in Texas like I do and you pay enough attention, you just see those microaggressions all the time. Mm. So, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, it was so much about the movie that was uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen those conversations happen around me before.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard, you know, people like Richard tell me those stories before. So it was a fucking incredible film, though, because it also can make you laugh and, like, you're awkward and then you're, like, challenged and then you're scared. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's a hard
it was
orchestra
terrifying
to play.
From the opening credits.
Right.
Oh my God.
The music he chose, it was like, I've been here in a dream, okay, and this is you, I feel some sort of, I don't know, man, something is feeling terrifying already about it. It was so perfect, just driving by those woods, it was like, dude, don't take me here. Like, I already knew from that moment, I was like, this is going to be such a hard movie to watch.
Yeah.
I knew from that moment, I was like, oh my God, he tapped into something too real in my brain, which took, like, I'm superstitious, and I'm suspicious of white people, and you combine that with some hypnosis, I was like, I'm here.
No.
I'm like, you took me all the way there. Right. It was too real.
I'm in an interracial relationship, and so it took me to, like, a different way, like, reaction, just to be in that situation. Like, I've been in it so many times where it's just like, you're at a family event. You're, like, the only black guy, one of two or something like that. Like my girlfriend's family is wonderful, but, like, I just know that feeling, and that just spoke to me in that way.
Yeah.
So I was very appreciative of the movie myself.
One of those situations where you look for the only other black person in the space, and you're like, we're
I had a metal concert once where things look like metal, like you know, in Europe and everything, and I saw one black guy and I literally sprinted across the
room. This guy connect. Yeah. In case the zombie apocalypse comes, it's just like, I need to know where you at.
Right. Yeah. You don't see many of them in the metal scene. There was a metal band called Killswitch Engage that for the while had a black singer named Howard, and that was, in my opinion, their best era, and it was so good. I saw them open for a band once, and it was like one of the few times in the Houston, Texas metal scene. Right. You know what I mean? Like, didn't see anyone of color there, but yeah, I can imagine this.
I'm glad he won for screenwriting. You know, the things I was reading. It's like, you know, when you're new, everything's a little bit political, no matter how talented you are.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's like, it's not your year.
Yep.
It's someone else's year.
I'll say one thing. Well, I'm fostered in my whole family, it's Caucasian. I wasn't fostered until like the age of like 15, 16. And I did live with my actual biological parents up until the age of 9. And then I was put in the foster care system. So, Hugh, I understand. most of the family functions, I'm just like, hey, I'm chocolate, you know. So it's like, and my father is also now he's a retired police officer, but in Texas, and I lived in San Antonio, Texas at the time till I moved to Austin. It's just crazy, and to see that, and it's all these microaggressions, and. Like, people, like, freak out. They're like, oh, why did that black person just freak out? It's like, probably because every party they've been going to, they're just like, I know two black people. They're awesome. You know? And you're just like, all right, that's great. Can you just say hello? And you like my shoes and my pants and shit. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why do you have to do that? But I don't think it's coming from a bad place.
Sure.
No.
I really think they're trying to, most Caucasian people are trying to
take over our minds and
bodies. Other than that,
they're trying to steal our bodies.
Holy shit.
Are you not paying attention, Richard?
It's like, no, I'm paying attention.
Jordan Peele trying to tell you, Richard.
Stay suspicious is what Jordan Peele is saying.
If you listen to Jordan Peele, he's just like, yeah, I went to some parties and that's where this kind of came from.
I think somebody just used their camera flash right now in front of Richard.
We're all, you know, part of these. We're a minority. There's white people everywhere. You leave your family, and it's like, you know, or you're with your family, and there's more white people. You know, we all. You know, I keep a white person in my bed just to keep an eye. I'm doing my part.
I like that. What you doing? Because I'm single.
Watching one. I got
I'm
one.
Single.
What secret groups are you going to?
I'm a mole.
Girl, I'm single. What you doing? But no, like, seriously, it's it can be a little nerve wracking. And I'm so happy I saw it with like Brad and Stephanie, and they got it. Y'all got it. There were some people there. I've never seen people so nervous looking. They were just like, I don't know if I should laugh or scream or run, you know? So
I would really like to know what was going on in the dude's head that I spit on.
Oh my God.
Like,
Oh my god!
Wait, I don't remember.
Was it black?
I can't even. I can't remember. It was just there was just something that was said in the. Right. I think it was the outdoors party scene, and someone said something to him, and it was just outrageous.
Right.
And I happened to be grabbing a drink of beer right when it happened. I just all over this dude's head, man. It was bad. He was probably trying. I don't know if he thought I was like
black
trying to.
Away?
I couldn't.
It was
tell.
So dark. I could.
I don't know.
You apologize?
Oh, dude, it? I felt bad for weeks.
He did.
Weeks.
Oh. He apologized.
I carry all
in
sorts
the
of
moment.
Guilt. That's the right. Jewish part of me. I was just like weeks of guilt for that. But, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I'm sure he could just wipe it off and he would be fine. So, I don't know if we wanted to get into this. Frances McDormand did a big speech at the Oscars about fighting for inclusivity, which I think is a pretty topical conversation when it comes to entertainment, especially as we're talking about things like Black Panther and Get Out. But at the same time, you know, she won Best Actress for a movie that has been sort of criticized for not being super inclusive and not necessarily given the best messages out there. So anyway, let's talk about inclusivity writers for entertainment, what it means for people who are you know, participating in these different productions. And then maybe we can dig into what's the problems with Three Billboards and diversity.
Can you explain what that is? I don't know
it's
what that is.
Like, pretty much you're guaranteeing that there will be racial and gender equality in the production of the film, right?
That's very
the,
good.
The, okay, okay. okay.
Like as the director or producer, I guess,
right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. There you go.
No matter.
Okay. Well, yes. Let's definitely talk Black Panther.
Let's talk about what we saw. We were like, we didn't see that. We didn't see that. Guess what? There's no people of color in the main parts. I kind of don't even look for it unless somebody recommends it. Okay, I'm racist. I've been laying claim to it. That's fine.
You're
know what?
You,
if it's a really great white people movie, then tell me about it. If it's just an all right white people movie, then I'm probably not going to get to it. So I, Tanya, was... I loved the trailer, and I had to see it. And when I saw it, I was like, yes, it's paid off. This was good. Good acting, good writing. I love this dirty, trashy story of white people. It didn't need black people. It was a story of white people. And that was totally fine. White history... It exists and it matters, and they were not leaving out black people. It's just saying no black people in that part of town.
Right. No doubt.
But the story was tremendous and dirty and American.
Uh-huh.
I was like, this is what the Olympics sees us as. This is what Europeans see America
exactly.
as. It's like
right.
dirty, like Tanya.
Exactly.
So that was good. Anyway, I saw that. Black Panther.
Oh, let's go. Let's do it.
You know, I don't know if
one of my favorite criticisms of Black Panther was online. Somebody was talking about, imagine if there was a all-white superhero movie with white gods and a whole white country. And someone's like, dude, there was one called Thor. They did three movies. It's all Viking gods.
Right? The Avengers. Have, the first
yeah.
one.
You have your shit already. Oh, man.
You have to point it out sometimes because it's so... normalized, people don't see it,
right?
They're
right,
so right. they were like, he didn't even notice.
Yeah,
you it know, happens.
I can say, as the general nerd, not super into comic book lore or comic books themselves, but like being adjacent to it and kind of into it, I have recently been beat to death with comic book movies and superhero movies. I've just like you know, all the Civil War stuff and like all of like the teams and like most of the Iron Man movies, I just totally don't get into anymore. I feel like it's like sensory overload. And so when Black Panther was announced, I knew it was going to be amazing because Richard has like talked to me about this comic forever, and I knew it was going to be important for him. And then I started to see like all the stuff coming out in the culture, and you know, when you see that one school, that elementary school, where they announced that for the field trip they were all going to go out to see Black Panther, and all the kids are dancing on the tables.
I didn't
like,
see that.
Oh my god, they went
beautiful.
Wild.
I put it on my Facebook. It was so beautiful.
You can see how much it meant to them and how much it's meant to everybody. And going into it, I knew it felt different than just going to see a comic book movie, you know what I mean?
You know, the only okay, living in Colorado, I saw it with my white friend, and I was like, oh, damn, I wish I had a couple black friends here. I wish I had my niece and my nephews, and
that's what,
even been. Though my friend is lovely, and we were at a theater that didn't want us to talk anyway, there's a couple I did the same thing with Get Out. I saw it with my white girlfriend, and I was like, damn it, I kind of wanted to. If I saw it with my sisters and my mom, we talked through the whole movie every time. So
yeah,
that we're commenting on the whole thing and having this experience together. My friends are much more polite than my family. Yeah. So. But anyhow, I was thinking about that.
Well, should we drop that spoiler warning just yet?
Spoiler! That's a really good point here.
Sorry.
I've got all the listeners.
That's good. No, you do.
If you haven't seen the movie.
We're spoiler sensitive, but we're probably going to spoil some shit. So if you haven't seen Black Panther yet, get your lazy
people
ass out and go see it.
Have to know that when they're listening to
a
podcast.
Right, right. No doubt. Like, but,
we're about to talk about Black Panther.
We don't want everyone giving them that. If you haven't seen it, go give them your damn money. Go watch the movie. Or fast forward for the next couple minutes because we're going to be talking about it for
this
a bit, so.
Show is 75% black people right now, so we're going to talk about Black Panther. What the fuck do you want? Okay. I mean,
good call though. We needed that.
It's important. We talk about other stuff too. They're big time nerds, but we're going to talk about this, of course.
Richard, when did you first read the original comics?
I can tell you. So I was thinking about this because I knew you question. So the first time I saw Black Panther, it was in Contest of the Champions, and I believe it was in 1980s, like that run, because they've had a recent run of Contest of the Champions.
What is that?
It's where all the superheroes are basically put on the planet and they challenge each other.
Oh,
and
so I
remember this vividly. It was burned into my brain. He was on a tree limb. And it showed him. And I was just like this. Who the fuck is he?
Oh, my God.
And I even know he was black. I even knew he was a black character.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who the fuck is that? Oh, my God, that costume is supposed to be you. So, and then, I found out later, just by doing the research and reading the comic books, it's like, oh, my God. Not only is he a superhero, but he's a king of a country. Mm. He's a king of a powerful country. And they infuse technology as well as magic. And I'm like, oh my God, what have I discovered? And it was as a kid, to see yourself represented, it wasn't on screen yet, but it was in a comic book.
Mm, cool.
And I was just that kid, in foster care, it's like this. I always kept to myself. I read comic books. It blew my mind. Because I had never seen an African-American, super... That was my first time. Anyway, it just blew my mind. The whole movie blew my mind. I love the costume designer. If you look at the ships, they're based on tribal masks.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. It was just a beautiful movie, and the icing on the cake is I saw it on my birthday with all of my friends.
Oh, awesome.
White, Asian, mm-hmm. just, gay, straight, whatever, and it was a beautiful thing. I don't know, it was just, I'm not trying to be all weird about it and everything, but I loved it.
You're not trying to nerd out about it right now? What's the name of the show?
But no, I mean, the thing that it transcended past a superhero movie.
Oh, yeah.
It turned into something where people were bringing their grandchildren and mm-hmm. their children, and it just happened to have a king who happened to be a superhero. But it was just so pointed, just everything from the bad guy. I'm just going to say it. This is one of the best bad guys ever since the mm-hmm. Vulture. I thought the Vulture, it goes Loki, the Vulture, and now
Killmonger.
Yeah, I was just like,
I don't know. I didn't even feel like Killmonger was a proper villain. I really hated
but
that.
But he spoke truth, though.
He spoke truth, but it was like, why did he have to die? I didn't understand that part.
That,
why did he, why was he,
right. I'm like, I get that.
I don't know. It was like, what was the villain part about him that he's trying to avenge his father's
but he's
death?
He's not a villain, and I take that back. He is a antagonist.
Yeah,
right?
I've heard him referred to as an anti-hero or an anti-villain. He's sort of like this really troubling character that you can't really wrap your brain around because it's like you want to argue with him. Like, you can see his point of view.
Right.
His means to the end might not be the same as your means to an end. He might be a little more absolute. Him trying to make sure he was the only king left in Wakanda was some fucked up shit. You shouldn't do that, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he wasn't like Richard kept saying, he wasn't wrong.
He wasn't. He was complex. Mm-hmm. But to tell you the truth, the death at the end, it actually meant something.
Yeah.
The fact that he said, "Do not bury me in Wakanda, bury me in the ocean where my people jumped off the ship and wanted to be free and would rather die than be in bondage."
Yeah. Right.
And that struck me. And then what I loved, the turnaround was because he was on the fence. The King of Wakanda, you know, Black Panther, he was on the fence. He was just like, should we give our technology to the rest of the world and help them? And the fact that he did that and then went to the place where he was a kid and his father was exiled and had a center to start doing what STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and have, you know, that kind of a place. So not just African American, but, you know, girls and whoever can better themselves, I thought was a beautiful thing. I hate that he had to die. I'll give you that. But I understand why he did, and it wasn't in vain. It wasn't a throwaway Marvel -- whatever bad guy, you know? So I don't know.
I just like the dichotomy between like African and like the African American, like just diaspora. Like, the way he comes back when Killmonger's in the throne room and he's like, he's chained up, and then he goes and delivers my favorite line, which is, "Hi, Auntie."
Yeah, I love that.
Have we seen these characters just operate in such a regal manner? And this, like, Killmonger just walks in, like, with just like all the swag and like stuff, like, I can like more personally like relate to. And just is like, "Yo, what's up?" Take over. I really enjoyed that part as well.
Chadwick Boseman actually agreed with your take on that too. He actually said that he felt closer to Killmonger than he did to T'Challa, and that he felt more like, you know, he had the same motivations as Killmonger, which is kind of an interesting thing. I mean, when you're talking about Killmonger being a troubling villain, like when the main actor actually relates to him more than he does his own hero character, it's kind of weird.
But that's important. Isn't that important that he had to do that and he had to play this regal king? And he's just like, "Damn, I really get where you're coming from." And I loved that whole dichotomy. It was like back and forth. I thought it was beautiful. But
let's talk about the Dora Milaje, the women warriors. Like, this is what I thought was probably the coolest part of the movie. I mean, I don't know if you could really pick the coolest part of the movie, but my wife and I went and saw Wonder Woman with Richard as well.
Right.
And, like, wanted to really think that Wonder Woman was going to be, like, the superhero empowering movie for women. And to a certain extent it was. But it did not represent to people like Black Panther did to kids. And when you see the women warriors in Black Panther and how they are respected equally with T'Challa and the other men in power. And that they're not fighting from, you know, weakness or hurt, but, like, just from raw strength and loyalty. Like, that's a really fucking cool element. And to know that that came out of two men running, like, the script of the show, I think is also kind of, like, a little stunning. But speaks a lot to, you know, Coogler and whoever is the co-writer was on the film. But
Yeah, Okoye, the general, she's such a badass. Like, I love the part where she's, like, guns, so primitive. As a SUV, and she throws her spear, wrecks the SUV.
That was one of the coolest special effects I've seen. That's awesome. Really unique, that whole thing. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, like, it wasn't a special effect, but I love that she had to have the wig on. Before she like went there, and then she used the wig as her weapon. She's just like, "Bam, this is who I am. Let's do it." Right. You know, and I'm like, "Yes."
Yeah, that, I think that was definitely my favorite scene. Of course, I mean, there wasn't a better scene than the casino scene and the car chase. I think. I mean, yeah, it was super fun. I almost wish what was Lupita's character?
Nakia.
Yeah, I almost wish she had like. I wish they would do something with her. I'd like to see her, you know, take the flower or whatever, eat the serum and and have some sort of powers and go on and do something. Because T'Challa was, he was more to me, he was more Prince than Panther.
Yeah.
And so it was like, oh, God, he's a diplomat. Great. This is not fun at all. You know, I wish that Nakia had more to do. I'd like to see the women do more badass stuff. It's like, whoever, if he wants to be a diplomat, fine. Next movie, it's about the people who want to go out and have this fight.
Yeah.
Well, the big argument that was kind of on the internet, everyone was like, everybody was like, basically, it's like, oh my god, he was more vicious in fight scenes in Civil War when his father died in Civil War. Mm-hmm. And I had to have this argument. It's like, yes, he is very regal. This is how he was raised to be the king. And he was unsure. Everyone was like, oh, he's so weak. I'm like, just because someone is unsure doesn't mean that they're weak. It means he's trying to figure this shit out. His dad just died. And he's hurt. And he went after that guy with vengeance because it was clear. It's like this, you killed my father? Come here. I'm about to kill you. And he didn't do it when he found out who the actual person was because he was going after the Winter Soldier. So I understand it. I understand why he played it the way he played it. And movies are a story, and at the end of it, he did what he needed to do, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he was missing a little ferocity. I can get that though. Like he, you know, I mean, like there's all this hype about, you know, this character being like, you know, sort of fierce, but he was very diplomatic. I mean, he was very political, royal, regal, like that whole thing. And I get that he is like sort of, you know, of royalty, so that makes sense. But
it felt like that's an angle towards whatever the next movie is going to be to make it make sense. I mean, I love so much about this movie, though. I mean, I loved, you know, the relationship between. I don't know the names, you guys. I'm gonna have to see it twice. About nerds is they always remember the details. I love that. My boyfriend's a sports nerd. He knows all the details. He knows the stats, the colleges. He's great to watch sports with.
You can hang on that.
Yeah.
But I can't.
Okay, but the relationship, Daniel Kaluuya was just, you know, in the Rhino Nation and his wife. And, you know, you have to make some decisions between, I was like, oh, career or love. That's what I was saying. I was understanding that part. And she's like, you know, career.
Right.
Yeah, but, well, country, really.
But, you know, same.
And it was nice to have. I love when they have a loyal general or somebody who's around who's good. It's like, who is our standard? Hey! I was like, who's our standard for good and truth?
Yeah.
I got all excited.
Yeah, maybe. Just walked into the room.
I feel for me, though, I what elevated it. In terms of it being more than just a superhero movie, was just that exact conflict. He wasn't as fierce as, say, we've seen of superheroes we've seen in the past, like Thor or Hulk, but the way he, like that scene where he's in the spiritual plane and he's talking to all these ancestors and he's yelling at them, saying, you guys fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm going to make this right, and I can't be here right now. Like, that to me is more powerful than anything I've seen in the MCU. Mm-hmm. And that's saying a lot, because we've seen a lot of cool stuff out of the MCU. But that makes him much more, like, of a strong character to me than his abilities, like combatively.
Absolutely, yeah. That scene was really, really cool.
That's my favorite by far.
Right? Yeah. And also just the idea of, like, this, like, tribal usage of this hallucinogenic sort of, you know, plant medicine that bestows upon him insight, power, connection to, you know, the ancestral plane. Like, all those themes are so cool to connect to, and the way that they pulled it off was fucking awesome.
Right.
No doubt. So what you were saying about Nakia, what's interesting about this is that this film actually made her an independent, strong character. But in the comic books before her, even in the stuff that Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote, she was sort of like this extremely doting after T'Challa character. Yes. Like sort of always following him around, trying to earn his affection, and like he didn't need her. And so this movie made a pretty hard shift character's history in the books.
She became a bad guy too. And I mean, because she was always doing after him and trying to get, and she became a bad guy at some point. And I love how they wrote her in this. She's like, I'm independent, I'm worldly, I went out there and I saw what's going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like this they're hurting. Why do we not share what you
know,
we have?
You know what you that know? Is. It's the influence of Michelle Obama. I mean, it's pretty much like, guess what? Guess what you could do?
There you go.
You could help him be a king, and you could be a queen too, and right. you could do all your own stuff, and... You know, help uplift somebody, and it doesn't take anything away from right. you. You still have your power.
Right.
And I think that's super influential, that idea of, like, you can be strong
right.
and you can be supportive and all of those things. But
our producer was talking about before the show how this story is almost kind of like an allegory for what's going on in our world today in terms of Wakanda.
Yes. Yes.
Debate between like just staying like kind of isolated and even nationalistic to mm-hmm. some degree and mm-hmm. then coming out and helping. And I just I thought it was nice to see like kind of the less violent, more compassionate take come from Nakia. Like it spawned yep. her. Like the first time they have that conversation, I think in the movie, is when T'Challa is talking to Nakia after he becomes king.
Yeah.
And I really like that idea. You have the guys the rhino guy, I don't know his name, but the guy from Get Out.
Right, right.
He's all about, you know, getting vengeance against Claw and, you know, starting up wars and, mm-hmm. you know, taking Wakanda and just taking over the world.
Right, right.
And it's just interesting to see the dichotomy between, like, just the two perspectives. And one is led by a woman. And I
yeah.
think that's the, obviously the right one, but...
Yeah, no, it was a perfect balance they struck there that was obviously, I guess, missing from the previous comics. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, I you know, the when you go to like the choice of the career over love that they had, I can only think of her as Michonne. I think it was
what's
her name? Danya? Anyway, when she has to make that choice with the Rhino King.
Okoye?
Yeah, that's right, Okoye, thank you. You know, you're seeing this, like, conflict with, like, national pride and right. national loyalty and commitment versus personal freedom and independence and choices. Mm-hmm. And that was yes. kind of an interesting conflict to witness. I don't know that I would ever really agree with that because I've never felt very nationalistic about anything. So
right.
It's kind of odd to see it in that perspective. It was a new, it was right. definitely a new way to envision it.
Well, I love the fact that, and they do in X-Men, but I think it was really poignant here, pointed, I need to go and say, that T'Challa was Martin Luther King, and that, you know, Killmonger yeah. was Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
To a certain degree, but they went about it in two different ways.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at history, and I love history, it's like, he's just like, no, let's just fight, let's just deal with this. And Martin Luther King was very much like, no, we can all live together.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we live together? Why does it have to be an either or absolute type of thing on either spectrum?
Right.
And I just, I love that. And, anyway, in
yeah.
the end, I think, I mean, and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, they knew each other. They didn't hate each other. They
right.
just thought two different ways, you know, because it was during the whole civil rights time.
Mm-hmm, right.
But anyway, I just thought it was wonderful that somebody who was an antagonist can influence somebody who's supposed to be the good guy,
right.
but influence them and say, you know what? We may not do it his way, but there's a different way of doing it. This is our way. And they move forward. I just thought it was beautiful. So
I don't know if anybody, I could forward it to you. I should forward it to you now. But a comic I know in L.A., Danielle Radford, I bet this phone is dead, isn't it? I'm just going to forward it to you. But she just did this brief little promo thing about like why Black Panther is black as fuck. She had some really great points, and they're like the Oakland connection, you know, having Killmonger come from Oakland where
yes.
the Black Panthers were
right,
started.
Right.
And there's just so much, and also Ryan Coogler's from Oakland.
Yeah.
and just incorporating all of that. And then, you know, on top of that, having like Kendrick Lamar involved.
Yeah.
And there's always, in Kendrick Lamar's music, for me, it really tries to combine the African American, the history of African Americans, yes, and the nobility of Africa, and the tied in again with the nobility of African Americans. Like, hey, it's all, we're all kings. And it was black as fuck, and I appreciate that they didn't ignore that, you know, instead of going like, this is the Honeymooners but with black people. It's like, no, this is a black story, and it's a world story. It's like, it's worth paying attention. I love to hear other cultures, and there's a difference when they put out movies and they actually involve black people in the directing and the styling, you know, involve the people who the story is about. It really makes for a great story. Like, I make a joke about I make a joke about Disney princesses, and I get to the Aladdin part. I'm talking about Jasmine, and this idea that, yeah, you know, how many white guys got together to decide that, Muslim woman, how about a midriff? Like, how many people got together to right, come up with that drawing? Like, you got to get some people involved who know the culture,
right,
and who appreciate the culture and have a lot to say about it. And you can tell in Black Panther that there was a lot of black people involved.
Yeah. Right?
And not only in front of the screen, but behind the screen, too.
Right.
And I just think that is wonderful. A lot of things I've been seeing on the internet, people are just like, what about Blade? What about Me or Man? What about Steel? And all this. It's like, look, this is transcended because not just behind the screen, but in front of the screen, this is done by black people, and they were all passionate. Mm-hmm. They were all passionate to bring this out there and bring that story out there. The first black superhero, which was written by Stan Lee and Kirby.
Yeah.
Right.
At a time that was poignant, which is in the, I believe, 1960s.
Yeah, they actually, what I read was Jack Kirby wrote Black Panther like 3 months before the Black Panther Party.
That's right. Formed. That's right.
It is kind of nuts. There's some really interesting feedback that his family gave about like the reception of the movie and how proud he would be, because he essentially was always trying to like push the push against the producers at Marvel, because like he would do things like the original Kirby Black Panther costume had like the bottom half of the mask was exposed, so like he would be on the cover of these, you know, Avengers or Fantastic Four comics, and they would force them to cover up his face because they didn't want black skin on the cover. But like Kirby would always send it to colorization with the mask exposed and force them to have to do it if they were going to follow suit. But he was like, fuck that, I'm not going to do that. Right. And he was like constantly always trying to push against the limits. So, you know, I was more fascinated by that. He gets sort of, I think, reduced from the history when you talk about it. But
he does.
He did. I don't know how much of a warrior for social justice he was in the space, but it seems like he really did.
Him and Stan Lee were in the 1960s. They really were. They were doing stuff, and they really went. I mean, they, you know, pushed Luke Cage out there. They did Falcon, who was a sidekick to Captain America. And this is the first film. I love Falcon. I really do. But he's a sidekick. Comic relief, sidekick. And it's like, this is the first film and comic book where it's like a black man is front and center, and not only is he a superhero, he also has to think about his people and make sure that they're taken care of. And I just think he's a complex character, and I loved how they did that on the screen. I love how they did it in the comic books. I mean, I don't know, y'all.
And his supporting cast too. I mean,
all women mostly. I loved it.
Like the supporting cast, like you talk about, like it's black men, black women. I love Princess Shuri. Like, she has so many cool like lines. She's like kind of like just the insight into the culture. She says, "What are those?" And like, I'm the only one who laughed in the theater because I knew, like, "What are those? Come on!"
Plus, she dropped that really amazing joke about colonizer. Hey, is colonizer the new Waipipo? Is that what that is? Because I think it should be.
I love that, like, she's like this, oh, you brought me another broken white man. She was talking about, like, the, oh, God, what's his name? Winter Soldier. She's like, I have to fix another broken white man.
All right.
I was just like, oh, they going for it.
Oh, well, and it was nice that they put the young women in. I mean, she was representing a really young woman who was in charge of technology. It's like, yes, right. Young
she
people.
She makes all the tech.
It's the damn young people. Mm-hmm. They're going to do the tech stuff. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, give them the position and the power.
Age. She's Spider-Man's age.
And it's the coolest tech we've seen. Like, right. We've seen Spider-Man. We've seen Tony Stark. Tony Stark has got nothing on
she's
being able
just
to put like
as smart, if not more.
More smart. Even smarter. Like, she has, like, that little remote thing where you can, like, remote control car and, like, dude. A plane and what?
That beats
gosh.
Batman and James Bond and all that shit.
Right, right, right. You said James Bond. She reminded me so much of, was it Q?
Q.
Q.
Yeah. Q.
Yes.
Because this is Q. Yeah. Right.
I think it's, but she's not some dusty old white man.
Yeah.
But hey, the new Q is like a young white guy. He's like kiddish looking.
Okay,
so we'll leave it at that.
I guess you could call that a marginal improvement.
Right, that's like a little bit.
They also showed how though she wasn't completely respected. I mean, by these other kingdoms, it's like they're old school.
Yes,
you run into some old school black people, they're still gonna not take you seriously. You're young black person, and I really appreciate how she still was given the authority to do. To run that by T'Challa. That was a great thing about him being so diplomatic, is like he could see that.
Mm-hmm.
That if a young woman was the best person for the job, then it's like, she just is.
So she has a great line. She says, like, just because something works doesn't mean we can't improve it.
Yeah.
It's just like that's a theme throughout the entire movie.
I love that.
I feel like just in the way that the tradition, the culture works, like there's always ways to improve. Like Wakanda does things a certain way, but they can do it better.
Yeah.
And I really love, like, she like was probably one of my favorite characters. I like M'Baku. Like, he's awesome. But
I love it. He's we're going to eat you. He's like, I'm just joking.
That was hilarious.
He's like, we're vegetarians. I'm just joking.
That was one of my favorite jokes.
I was like,
When they barked down that dude, too, when he was trying to talk in court.
I want to just start barking people down.
Yeah, that needs to be the dude.
Nobody's feelings.
Next time someone tries to mansplain you, you should start doing
it. I basically do. I am very close to barking and foaming at the mouth. Lately, I'm finding that's happening so easily.
So, one other thing I wanted to bring up about Black Panther, because you mentioned Blade. Did you know that in, like, 99, Wesley Snipes tried to get Black Panther made?
He did.
Where he was going to be running around in basically a leotard.
Right.
Like, not even, like, the whole tech suit.
I know, that's why I'm so thankful for superhero
what
movies.
What could that
now.
Have been like?
Right? Now. Because I ain't going to say my age. But anyway, I was a kid back then, or teenager, or whatever. I was just like, why can't they not make good superhero movies? Until Iron Man? I'm like, oh my God, they can do Black Panther, they can do Storm, and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. But back then, man, he even said he was thankful. He goes, no, this is good. Thank God.
They should make a Storm movie. I feel like Rihanna could pull off Storm.
I think she
could. I feel like she's like just the right age and confidence to like pull off Storm and not make it corny. I'll just put that out there in the universe.
No, I agree. And also, like, apparently Marvel and Disney have been trying to get the rights for X-Men because...
They got
they just got that sewn up.
Fox,
so,
it's like...
So, oh, that's right, yeah.
So they're doing that right now. But of course it's going to take a year or two for all the legal crap to come out. But they acquired the X-Men, Deadpool, Fantastic Four.
So like the next Black Panther movie, we might see him with Storm because they get married like in
the comic books.
Oh, do they?
Yes.
I thought I had seen that.
But they got divorced.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know.
That's of course.
Right, it's like this.
It wasn't that quick.
It wasn't that quick. But my favorite thing, oh my God, in the comic books is like, remember when Obama and Michelle and Obama took the tour all around the world?
Yep.
They basically did a comic book version of that. And I love, like, at one point, they were doing mutant registration. And it's like, you're a mutant, Storm. You need to register. And she's like, no, I have diplomatic immunity. It's like, time to leave the United States. We go right. somewhere else.
Mutant ban sounds a lot like something we're dealing with nowadays.
Yeah, it does.
Mutant ban.
Or right. register. Yeah. Register your yeah. ass. I'm like, yeah. no, I'm good. Right. But yeah, that was amazing. But
all right.
Hope it happens.
Well, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be right back with the next little bit with Janae.
Hooray!
So this episode of Nerd AF is brought to you by Stillwater. Stillwater Brands is a really cool cannabis company here in Colorado, and it was really founded on the idea that, like, you should be able to consume cannabis and not just get super fucked up and super high. So what they make are these really great teas. What I've been drinking throughout this whole episode is their instant coffee, but they've also got a little product called Ripple. It's like a little dissolvable powder you can put into drinks and also like sauces or olive oils or, you know, smoothies. There you go. There you go. Hey, there you go. Yeah, you could get creative with it. You know what I mean? No, these really great women own this brand. They're really cool. They were just moms, and they were like, we should be able to like do this whole mom thing when just take the edge off of it. And so they made these really great brands. So we want to definitely check out Stillwater. They're supporting us this episode. We want to give a major shout out. And I've been drinking the Stillwater coffee through this whole episode. So if you're noticing me getting more and more high as we go along, that's probably why. Thank you, Stillwater. All right, we're back with the Nerd AF podcast. Like I said, we are joined today by Janae Burris of Pussy Bros Comedy. Janae, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in South Central LA and getting into comedy prior to getting over here to Denver.
I didn't know you were going to bring that up.
Going way
I
back.
I know you were going to bring my hood up. okay. No. South Central was, well, I guess it's the only thing I knew, essentially. I started doing comedy in L.A. after college. I went to college, like, in Valencia, 45 minutes from where I grew up. You know, I'm going off to college down the street. and then I moved back into a different part. L.A. is so big, though, that when you do that, 45 minutes away from South Central, it's a whole nother world. I'm not going to cross paths with any of the same people.
Right.
It's a different life. And then after college, I was in, I lived with my ex, like in the Redondo Beach area, away from theater and stuff. And I would drive 25 miles to get to this play I was in, which is absurd in LA. It's absurd. 25 miles, that's 2 hours. It's absurd. And I was doing that to get to theater. And I was like, look, I got to move to the Valley to be and do my thing. So,
what got you into theater?
I just put myself in it one day. I went to school, I think my whole life I've been in arts classes, my whole life, like, you're just trying out arts, you're like, well, are you good at any of this stuff? You take some dance classes, and you take some painting classes, and you go to the museum a lot, and, I was lucky enough to, although I was in, like, an at-risk school neighborhood situation. My teachers would take me to museums and live performances, and I'd see Alvin Ailey, and I'd see all kinds of stuff. So I was exposed to the arts very early on. And Fame. You remember the show Fame in the movie? Fame. I always wanted to go to that school.
Me too.
I wanted to go to that school, and essentially when I went to college, I did. I went to an art school. And I'm so congested right now. Now I sound like I'm going underwater. Sorry, guys. theater. And then after theater was some improv. Because if you live in LA, you got to take improv. Mm-hmm. And improv.
I was never really good at comedy improv, no. But I did, I acted in a movie with no script once.
Oh, my
where
God.
Where I had to improv the whole thing. Ew, so that was fun. Yikes. That was great, but nobody should see the movie that I was in.
Whoa, man.
Oh,
yeah. Sounds like that'd be painful to watch. Uh-huh.
I play like an evangelist Christian preacher's son who is a Christian evangelist on a college campus.
Okay.
If you can imagine that.
Oh, my God.
So,
wow.
Yeah, it's
fun. Okay.
Wait, doesn't Christopher Guest do that? Like, he, like, it's all improv.
From what I heard, Best in Show. They absolutely have a script, though.
They got some bones.
It's called, like, a through-line script. So, you know, they know where they're going, you know, where they're going to steer the plot developments. But,
okay.
And that's kind of what we have, was, like, this needs to happen, you know, piece by piece.
And also, Christopher Guest is, very
Christopher
skilled.
Christopher
Guest. Yeah.
His company of actors, they are very skilled. Mm-hmm. Because that is
they're
hard
amazing.
To do.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, oh, we just sing opera. We just go around and we run out of space and we sing opera sometimes. Whoa, that's hard. But yeah, we're talking about theater. You know, you do improv and then you do enough improv and you go see stand up and you're like, hold up, mm-hmm. I could do that. Like,
yeah,
you know, improv, you have to share the laughs, you have to share the silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then in stand up, it's just all you and. You do that. So LA to Fresno, Fresno to Denver, Denver to today.
Nice.
Comedy. Stand-up comedy.
Okay.
What are your favorite nerd interests? Like, is it about art? Like, do you nerd out around art? Are there...
I didn't think I did because most of my friends are artists.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get around people... I'm always surprised when I meet someone who's not an artist. I'm like, oh, wait, what? You know, you're not thinking like me, like... It's art, man. We're expressing ourselves. Maybe I do nerd out about, I guess, stand-up comedy. It used to be theater, and then it became stand-up comedy. You can really obsess about it.
Mm-hmm.
You can really obsess about it. Doing it, watching it, consuming it, getting better at it, growing at it, trying to make money at it. It's just like nonstop. Write more.
Yeah.
More of it, more of it, more of it.
When you hear stand-up comedians talk about it, there's like all of these different strategies that different comedians take on and different like archetypes and, you know, styles and, you know, writing techniques. Mm-hmm. And, you know, only when you can like, you know, I've been listening a lot for years to the WTF podcast of Marc Maron and hearing him sort of break down with his guests sort of, you know, all these different comedians he brings on and, like different comedic techniques, just the way they talk about it, it's so heady, and it sounds like it's, you know, the way you hear comic book nerds talk about comic books. You know what I mean? It's
details.
Yeah,
details.
So layered,
deeper and deeper. I'm always surprised to meet people who have never seen live stand-up comedy, and I'm surprised to talk to those new people about it. Their understanding, some people's understanding of stand-up comedy, is that. It's just a guy up there being funny. That is what stand-up comedy is. And it's like, no, it's actually an artist, a person who is writing a script for themselves or developing their script. So you may have heard these jokes before, but this person is, it's like rehearsing a play in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point you have a huge set because you have a super, anyway, there's a lot into it, but it seems like people don't understand that it is like building a set.
Right.
Building experiences, building a personality, building the skills and the technique and the confidence, tightening up the writing. It's like, it just keeps growing and, you know, you're perfecting it. It's like sand. Mm-hmm. Just trying to make it perfect. It's never going to be perfect. Yeah. And then you record an album and you, like, blow it away.
Right on.
Man, what did we smoke?
That was Colombian Gold. It was really good. We're also...
Feel awake. I feel present.
Stillwater Coffee is
well. Oh, yeah, I'm having coffee.
So,
we love
that's always
Sean.
Helpful. Yeah, right. In terms of, like, your comedic style, when do you think you really, like, found that voice and persona that you crafted? Was it in L.A.? Was it here in Denver? Was it recent? Was it something that you, like, knew you wanted a long time ago and you've just been shaping, like you said, like, sort of what
it's been
like?
Shaping and growing with me. I am becoming my mother. I first saw it in college. You know, I would audition. You know, at some point in theater, I don't know if for you, but I feel like a lot of us gals wanted to be Meryl Streep.
Mm-hmm.
I could play anything.
Right.
And then somewhere around like just fourth year undergrad, it was like, oh no, I just do versions of my mom. So hopefully that is what's called for in this part.
That's, yeah,
because
I like that.
That's and I look in the mirror every day and I'm like, oh, I'm a new version of my mom today. Hi, mom. Today, everything I do. And so I saw that early on and I knew that it was just going to become more and more of that. And I didn't try to make myself be any particular way. I figured out early on. I was like, okay, don't fight against this. Mm-hmm. Let it be how it's going to be. There is some DNA that she and I share and it's like, I'm going to be my mom if my mom sat down and wrote jokes. If my mom was funny, I can't remember if my mom was funny. I told my friend that I was like, I'm so much like my mom, but I don't know, you know, did I get my sense of humor for her, from her? Is my mom funny? And he was like, are you funny? And I was like, oh!
Oh! That's my back friend. Off. My friend Aaron Uris. It's planting a nightmare in your mind.
Something to think about. But it's like, maybe I got my humor from my dad, perhaps. Yeah. But I got so much else in my personality from my mom, and I'm so much like her. I think we have different opinions, but I express my opinions as though I'm her or something. It's weird.
It's so weird when you get to a certain age and you start to like notice your parents in you in a way that you're like, well, I don't want that, and then you're like, well, I mean, I guess that's just me. That's how I'm going to express myself. I'm still going to have my own opinions or whatever, but like the way it came out is so my dad or so my mom, you know what I mean? And my wife and I laugh about this shit all the time because I'll like respond to something just completely negatively. She'll be like, you want to do something? I'm like, no. And I like real grumpy, no. It's like, so my dad, but I have a very different person, but for some reason, those little bits will come out, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just not funny when your parents are doing it, but when it comes out of you, it's a little bit more of a satire, I guess. Yeah.
But does she notice it? Does Stephanie, she's like, that's your game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
It's a good way to cut each other at the knees, you know what I mean? You want to stop someone dead in the tracks and tell them, it's like, that's your parents right there.
Oh, man.
You are inseparable from them.
So, Janae, who are some stand-up comics that you listen to and take inspiration from?
I mean, mine is not even super fun. It's the traditional stuff. Richard Pryor. Mm-hmm. I listen to Ellen. Some people are surprised that I listen to Jeff Foxworthy.
Why?
But his old stuff.
My family loved him. I'm like, what?
Well, it's just like.
That's an anomaly, I think.
Sorry. You're like, Richard, you were raised by white people.
He's working class, you know, kind of poor. And when he talks about the older stuff, I connect to. And he's a great writer. He writes jokes. He writes funny stuff, silly stuff about a type of family he came from. Richard Pryor does character stuff. Ellen is really great with like misdirections. Live, I get to see so many people live. Leslie Jones, I'll always forever bring her name up. Leslie Jones live stand up. She's like a beast on stage. Like in, like she comes out with a towel because it's like, oh yeah, she's about to get sweaty up here. You're like, oh, she's about to work, huh? Yeah, she's about to work.
It's real.
And she absolutely does. She's like, I was standing up, like doubling over, like slapping the table, and I was emceeing for her, and it was. I had a great set, and then she had a ridiculously great set, and I was like, oh my god, she's so good. She's great. Jay Farrow is great. He's like super hard worker, very smart, he's so very precise. Talented. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jay Farrow's great.
How about Whoopi?
I love her. I love her. She's an inspiration. She doesn't do any stand up, but I came from a theater background, so I connect to like the one woman show.
Right.
Because I'm gonna perform something in a humorous way. Like that's what I originally wanted to do was to do like a one woman show, like John Leguizamo. Freak. Like blew my mind when I saw that, and absolutely. I wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And stand up comedy is that. And someday I hope my stand up comedy evolves into like there's some music in it or something it becomes more one woman show type of thing. But right now it's just like obsessively trying to make people laugh. Like it's tiring. It's
I can imagine.
It's no matter how many laughs you get, you're like, there's missed a spot. Missed a spot. There's right there. Could have had more laughs and right
one
there.
Extra.
How come that guy in the front wasn't laughing that one time? I should have looked at him. I should have damn it. And you just you're like have a panic attack for like 10 minutes about how you fucked up. You should quit. You should quit. Go in circle and then you do it again.
One of my favorite nerd discoveries recently about Whoopi Goldberg is that she was like very active in Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Yes,
as the bartender slash spiritual advisor.
Yeah.
Have you watched?
Like, I just started watching it for the first time in my entire life. I've never been into Star Trek,
guys.
But I just started watching them.
Everyone would just go into what was it? 10 Forward. That was like the bar.
Yeah.
And then I go up in there, and I love like one of my favorite episodes. It's like she's like, "Here you go, Worf." And he's like, "What is this?" And she's like, "It's prune juice." And he drank it. He goes, "This is my favorite drink ever."
Whoopi is a spiritual advisor doling out alcohol, wearing fabulous hats. She's always wearing a fabulous hat.
Yeah.
She had this, like,
well, she's like Isaac from The Love Boat, essentially. You know, she's she's your black person that you can tell your secrets to. We come in handy. We're secret keepers. Uh-huh. Especially the women. Whoopi's great. Yeah. But we're, do you guys watch any comedy? You go see stand-up comedy? Are you into comedy? Do you understand comedy? Do you think women are funny? No. Who gives a fuck, actually, about that one? No,
feel free to, like, ding immediately. But there's, like, something going on with, like, Monique and, like, a boycott of Netflix.
No, I know what it is because I, like, was watching it. Go ahead.
Okay. So, long story short, like Monique, like so after Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock and Amy Schumer have gotten these big Netflix deals,
that's right.
Monique is trying to get a similar deal.
Yeah,
she only got like they got like in the millions. Like Amy Schumer got like $13 million. Monique got offered like $500,000, and she's calling for like a boycott of Netflix due to racial and gender inequality. And then like Breakfast Club, Charlamagne Tha God gives her Donkey of the Day, and it like escalates from there.
Oh, he did?
He did give her Donkey of the Day, and she came back at him.
Oh,
like,
no!
Why can't you, like, why would you try and bring down our sisters like that? So I was wondering, like, just Whoopi, like, as a...
Whoopi went after her. Like, she came on The View, and she talked about it. Not that I watched it.
I love this that we have... you are in charge of watching The View now for research.
You need
somebody to bring that to the table.
I just pick it up from top to tab, and I was just like channel surfing. I'm like, oh my god, I'm only gonna you.
And you said Whoopi came at her?
No, Whoopi came at her. She's just like this. She goes, hey, what have you done? It's like Amy Schumer sold out, what was it,
Madison Square Garden.
Thank you. And it's like this, Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle did like 1,500 shows.
Thank you. This person did this.
Mm-hmm.
What have you done?
Mm.
And, God, she was just like, I am Monique. And I have done these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love Whoopi. She's like,
I mean, Whoopi's the only one that could do that. Yeah, because right, Whoopi has done it all.
But she's like, call me. She's like, before you did this mess, you should have called me and I would have explained it to you.
She's like, that's worse than what Charlamagne gave her.
She's well, like, call me. She's like, I am.
Okay, there is some duality in this because oftentimes I think that black women are undervalued. And it's the discrepancies in pay that she sees between herself and these men and Amy Schumer is actually, it happens in a lot of fields. So it's not like she's making this shit up, but because of how the arts and entertainment world works, it's like, you know, these guys have done these things that have earned them the paycheck.
Right.
That's what happened. It's like Monique, you know, is Monique selling out stadiums for stand-up comedy? I'm not sure. She has an Oscar. She's brilliant. She is hilarious.
She kept talking about it.
Mm-hmm. It's still ongoing.
And I appreciate Monique for bringing it to light, whether you believe that it is happening to her, that it is justified that she makes that percentage of money that these other guys make or not. I appreciate her stepping forward and bringing it to light because it starts to make people take a look. just take a look sometimes, because it sometimes it does happen where you're in a situation where you're being undervalued because you're a woman and people are just used to doing that. But I do think that Dave Chappelle, his money, I would not compare Monique's money to Dave Chappelle's money.
Right. Amy Schumer, though. Another woman.
I mean, their money was a little closer. I would have to say, okay, you might need a better team to get you that money. Because Amy Schumer's money, I feel like Monique could get that money.
Right. But Amy Schumer, let's see what...
But Amy Schumer to Chappelle, or Amy Schumer to Rock, is like...
I think that's different.
She's
that's
very new compared to them.
Exactly. And they offer her, I think it was what, and don't quote me on it, don't be hating me in comments, but I think it was $1 million. And they basically went back and forth, and she brought forth this, and she goes, this is what I've done. I'm an award winner, Oscar winner, all of this. And then they basically came back and they go, take it or leave it.
I'm pretty sure it's 500,000.
Was it 500?
You're talking about Monique's was 500,000.
Okay, all right. Yeah. All right. I'm like, don't
okay, so she should have said no thank you then.
And she did. And she walked away from it, and she got mad.
You have to be able to do that.
But she got mad. Of course. And she went on View, and she went on TV, and she's like, I'm so angry. And I'm like, this, I go, you walked away from that, sister.
I think she's got to find herself a different company that's willing. Really if she and that is the difference between most of us who will have a career and those of us who will not have a career. It's like, how much do you really, really believe in yourself? When can you say no to some shit and turn down some money sometimes and put and invest in yourself and go this direction? Like, it's
Even Chappelle did that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he was like, you know what? That $50 million will come back around.
That's right.
Okay, and it did. He said, that ain't my last $50 million, right?
More than Monique at that point still, but whatever, you know what I mean? It's valid.
Chappelle started when he was 14, by the way. Let me just put that out there in the world. The man started when he was 14, so for stand-up comedy, it's not even the years, it's the hours. Right. And he was known for putting in the hours as a kid and being in clubs that he had no business being in. That's so, you know, I think Amy probably started, she's not even as old as him. So even if she did start at 14, she doesn't have as many hours in the game as him. So, but yes, there is between men and women in the industry, just like any other industry, women are being paid a lot less than men. We've also been able to do what we do for less time. So we're trying. We're like trying to tip this thing over right now, you know? Ellen finally breaks through. You're like, oh, thank God, we got one. We got one. Come back for the rest of us. So we're trying.
I think something seems to be tipping in the culture, though. I mean, I think, like, when you see in the last, you know, 5 or so years, the rise of Leslie Jones and now Tiffany Haddish, like, there's more of these discoveries starting to take place, and I think women are starting to more command these, like, really hilarious, you know, sort of spaces in comedy now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and honestly, like, I don't get out to see enough stand-up comedy as much as I'd like. I have seen your stand-up comedy now twice, and every single time I feel like you're competing or on the rise to compete at the same level, and it's just really good to see that, because I feel like, you know, maybe now might be a time where those discoveries can happen a little bit easier than they've happened in the past. Not like it's going to get much easier, but I don't know. What do you
well, I mean, I started a lot later than people, so I feel like if I were 22 and there was this much internet and capabilities of finding where to go for comedy, like, I would have jumped on it when I was 22, perhaps.
Right.
But also that came with living and being more confident. Mm-hmm. And as I grew as a woman, I could be more comfortable in trying to do stand-up comedy. You know, guys, though, they got the balls for it at 14, I guess. Must be nice. Must be nice. Mm-hmm. It's helpful that those avenues are there, but that means that you have even more people competing.
Right.
So now that I went to school for theater, but also, you know, your little cousin who's in middle school, he can also turn on his camera.
Right.
Right.
So we're in the same, we're fucking competing for the same spot on Last Comic Standing, me and this fucking 12-year-old.
Yeah.
This internet sensation. So
next Dave Chappelle.
Next, they will say that all the time. The next, he's the next Dave Chappelle. You're like, oh, because he's got 1 million followers? God damn. All right.
So, slightly nerd tech question about comedy. I noticed lately a trend in all of the comedy shows I've gone to. I have had to submit my phone into these special radio frequency
yonder
bags. So that you seal your bags up, or you seal your
well, this is unique to Comedy Works and Paramount, probably.
Is it? Because I don't think they're the only ones that will seize your phones prior to a comedy show.
Comedy Works and Paramount and Dave Chappelle takes them with him to his shows, and they're starting to get around more. So Yonder was like an independent company, and then Dave Chappelle showed up with them, and then Comedy Works were like, we're investing, we want Yonder all the time. Mm-hmm. And then Comedy Works Entertainment also books and helps at Paramount, so then they're like, we're going to do it over here, too, because it changes the viewing experience, because people are so distracted by their phones. It's like, it's a live experience. I see you not paying attention. You're affecting the work I'm doing up here with your light shining out there. And so let's put them away for 2 hours. Tell the fucking babysitter, don't drop the baby for 2 hours.
Well, it's also sort of a copyright violation in a sense if you're constantly broadcasting somebody else.
People take pictures.
Or recording.
And so that happened because someone recorded Chappelle in Chicago at a show being belligerent. And, you know, but also your material's not ready.
Yeah.
It's not ready for everybody. I'm testing it.
Right. I've heard they've been also doing that. You know, getting back to it, like in movies, like I think it was Annihilation, and they were just like all the people who were coming to review it. They're just like, phone in here. You see the movie, you get it when you come out. Here's your number, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about
that. I mean, I get it.
You are not born with phones. Do we remember?
True.
We don't remember.
Well, but it also sort of seems like if you draw it out a little further in the future, a little bit of a futile motion, because right now we use devices that are separated from our bodies, but very shortly we're going to have shit like contacts to record with.
You know what I mean? I'll tell you a little secret. I'll tell you a little secret about Yonder. If you don't fucking give them your phone, you can keep your phone. But if you pull your phone out, you will be immediately removed from the premises.
Yeah.
So if you have enough self-control,
right?
Then don't pull your phone out.
Right.
You know, but some people have no self-control, so they have to do it. It's not for you if you know how to watch a fucking film or live show without pulling your phone out.
Yeah.
But people do. And we at Comedy Works, there's floor staff, there are managers, they can see you, I can see you, I'm a tattletale, I work there.
Right, yeah.
So, I'll tell on you too. And the comic on stage can see you. Mm. They can see every seat in the house.
Right.
So,
just curious, like, how would you feel if, hypothetically in the future, there is no phones, we can record wearing some sort of special technology contact, and we're sitting in the audience recording some of your stand-up and sharing that out to Facebook. Would you feel like that's getting you more exposure?
You know, I can't even anticipate what's going to happen in the future. Could you have foreseen any of this, really? I'm sure I'll adapt.
I've always talked about, like, old people now probably feel like they're living in a Black Mirror episode. Where folks are, like, zooming down the street where, like, with remote control skateboards and shit. You know what I mean? Like, talking on phones that are attached to
It's terrifying at my age because I was born in a time where half of my life there wasn't really phones and technology and internet and shit. Not accessible to regular people, everyday people. Right, a computer in my pocket, you know, not for everyday people. Internet, my aunt had internet. And I went and I read a lot of stuff.
Right.
It was like I didn't know how to get to anything else. It was like, reading. Jeez, great.
It's just an online book.
It's just, whatever one I had access to. But, I mean, I can't imagine what will happen because we've certainly adjusted. Like, we've adjusted with Yonder to put the phones away. You know, at some point, somebody's going to come up with something that just deactivates. It's like you're in a basement. Right. You get no signal.
Yeah, exactly.
And that happens in places.
Sort of signal blocker. Yeah, totally. All right, should we get into the game?
Yeah. We're game.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right, so we got a little game we're going to play here. The idea is, the game's called Chillin' Like a Villain. And in this segment, we're going to talk about a number of different supervillains from different genres, not necessarily just from comic books or superhero movies, but from video games, from other books. And we're going to try to decide what they would be doing if they were chilling in their free time.
Two.
So, We're going to start with Hugh. You want to let you know, what do you think Dr. Octopus is doing when he's chilling in his free time?
Man, Doc Ock, man. Doesn't he at one point, like, possess Spider-Man's body?
He takes over Spider-Man's body.
He's Spider-Man right now, so he gets to, like,
he was spectacular. I think it's spectacular, but it may be, like, ultimate.
Well, I'll say, so when he's chilling, he's Spider-Man.
Potentially.
Just swinging around.
I mean, like, he's got the four, like, metal arms. Like, what would you do if you had, like, four giant metal arms in your spare time? I would, like, you know, try and play some sports, you know?
Go
to the soccer field and, you know, go into, like, a local club game and just...
Right.
Run around. I know.
Dude, you could probably command some foosball.
Exactly.
I bet.
Foosball champion.
No doubt. Dude. I bet you'd be a hella gardener.
Right.
You could just, like... with all those different arms.
Multitasking.
Planting shit while you're digging holes.
Right.
You got an eight watering over here. Using your spade over here.
Okay,
Richard.
Go to Dave and Buster's.
Win
a bunch of tickets.
You won again.
Whack-a-mole motherfucking champion.
Just drop the basketball into the basket, like, over and over. Just like, I win.
Why do I keep winning? You got metal arms. You're crazy.
Ski ball champion?
There you go. Dude, that's fucking hilarious.
Oh my god.
Richard, what's Bowser doing when he's chilling like a villain?
Who's Bowser?
Bowser.
Bowser's
from
Mario?
Super Mario Brothers?
Like the guy who chased the princess?
The big dinosaur spiky bad guy?
I don't play that.
You don't know who Bowser is?
What about Sabretooth?
What's Sabretooth doing when he's chilling like a villain?
Getting high. I like this. He needs some downtime. It's like, you can't hate forever. You just gotta, like, let go.
It's just being a high ass cat,
right? Trying to go after Wolverine. He's like, this
probably
is like,
doing
I'm so
some.
Angry, but I can't find him right now.
Repelting.
He's like, lay down, kitty. That's your catnip.
What?
That's what I think.
All right, Sabretooth on catnip. Doesn't catnip make cats, like, totally crazy and jumpy and shit?
I don't know. I thought it, like, relaxed them. I'm not a cat person.
Has anybody seen a cat on catnip?
No.
Have you seen a cat on catnip?
Yes,
cat
I have.
What do they act like?
Okay, my friend had a kitten, and he was trying to give him a little bit, and then he wasn't responding to it, and so he, like, opened it, and then, like... sort of accidentally just he breathed the wrong way and blew it all in the kitty's face. And that cat was just, like, sprinting around the room and, like, seeing shit. And I was just like, oh my god, you just dosed this cat.
It's like a cat on LSD.
He was tripping.
Okay, Sabretooth on LSD. Now just imagine
okay,
that.
So that's not good. Maybe we just need a pointer light.
Yeah. Maybe he just needs some rosé.
A pointer. Maybe.
Sabretooth with a pointer.
He's going to go on a rampage.
Yeah, that's not good. Okay, that's not relaxing. I get it.
That's
great. He loves it.
I'm a cat person.
I'm just thinking, if I'm Cyclops and I'm going up against Sabretooth
on LSD,
I'm just gonna, like, beep, beep, beep.
Right. It's like here's the point of it.
Oh my god, you guys are such nerds. You're killing me. I love it. You're super into it.
Have you seen Lord of the Rings, Jay?
Oh. Yeah, I have.
Okay, so tell me what the Dark Lord Sauron's doing when he's chilling like a villain.
I don't know.
Optometrist.
He's like, this is like, check me out. I think I got glaucoma and shit.
I don't know, maybe in a hot tub or something.
Sauron's hanging out in a hot tub?
Yeah, in a hot tub. He likes that whole swirly atmosphere.
Right?
Yeah. I say he's hot tub.
He's just
hot
being
tub. Resting those old bones. Just chilling with some other old broads.
Yeah.
In a hot tub, drinking.
He's got that dark
cognac.
Lord arthritis.
Right.
Yeah. Getting a hand massage, like, by some, like, lovely 68-year-old. He's like, ooh. Treating her like she's a hot thing.
Right.
Just a flaming eye in a hot tub.
The flaming eye, yeah.
Farley. You need some drops. You need some drops.
What's going on out there?
It's Galadriel, dry. What is she doing?
What's going on out there? What are you doing?
I have the all-seeing eye. I see you.
I love it.
Okay. Oh, you got Bowser. Man.
I'm going to take Bowser.
You got Bowser.
So I think Bowser is like, you know, he's like an omelet chef. You know what I mean? Like, you go to a brunch, there's the guy who's like making the omelets. Thinking he's an omelet chef, you know?
What? Cooking in his eggs. Spare time.
Yeah.
In his spare time.
I mean, you know, oh, he's
just for fun.
Just for fun.
I like to take cruises.
Relaxing to cook. Right. I love to cook.
You know, he's like a dinosaur. He's familiar with eggs. So he's working with what he knows. But, okay. Like, he always has to have this, like, hard exterior all the time and be like, oh, just I gotta kidnap people.
He has a shell.
You know, I'm just thinking, like, I just like to make some eggs.
Yeah, okay.
Make some vegetables for my kingly garden.
My dad's a Sunday brunch cook. He just jumps on the line for a couple hours on Sunday.
Bowser's Brunch.
Oh, shit.
He likes all the other
it's a truck. He does like a weekend truck, maybe. Yeah, food truck with omelets.
But what about the princess?
No, look. He kills Toadstool. He kills Toadstool. He throws a little bit of mushrooms up in the omelet.
Oh, that's making me so hungry.
Mushrooms are his bad guys.
Like, yeah.
He's got plenty of money. He's a mushroom omelet chef. he makes vegetarian omelets.
Really go for an omelet right now.
No, we kill our mushroom people. Shit ain't right.
That's what I'm thinking.
He hosts a Sunday brunch for all the other Nintendo villains.
That's right. Yeah. Dude, the Hammer Brothers are always fucking the brunch up. They show up, they're just like brashing all the plates up.
Hey, what's up, bro?
The booze try to eat it, just go straight through. I'm like, that's awesome.
And of course, the fucking plumbers come jumping on top of everything. They fuck the whole brunch up. Jumping on top of Bowser, he's just like, I'm just trying to make fucking omelets. I can never chill.
I can't get over it. I'm sorry. Mushroom people. Ain't right. They deserve to live.
All right. So before we sign off, let's go ahead and throw a little plug out there. Janae, tell us what you got going on.
Oh, man. I could have been getting ready.
Plug.
I'll tell you what, while you're getting ready, we'll go ahead and talk about our favorite nerd things that we're getting into right now.
Mm-hmm.
Richard, what are your favorite nerd things right now?
Black Lightning.
Black Lightning.
And, let's see, Black Lightning and Not Enough Love for the Sci-Fi Channel's Channel Zero Butcher's Block. I just got into that.
Okay.
Twisted. It's an anthology horror, so this is the third season, and holy crap, I officially bought it on my Vudu, and I was just like, I'm not going to do it, I'm going to watch it on YouTube, and I'm like this, I got to buy this shit, this is so good. So anyway, those are my two, Black Lightning and Channel Zero Butcher's Block.
Guys. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned Channels. So that's horror? Is that horror genre?
It is, yeah.
Because you said earlier on that was sort of a passion of yours. It's like,
right, I love horror. Independent like horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of an independent horror like anthology.
Cool.
Series that's going on. It's kind of like Black Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
too afraid to watch most things.
It's pretty cool. It got a little creepy because, like, at some point I was like, oh, very nice. So, but it's really good. If you want to be scared, it's really, really spooky right now. So, anyway, that's what I'm watching.
What are you nerding out on?
I'm going to hit my anime side up here and go with Dragon Ball Super. Like, it's about to end. They got a new series. Like, if you haven't heard about Dragon Ball Super, it's been going on for a while. It's after the event of Dragon Ball Z.
Right.
New forms. Goku's just hit his ultimate form, which is, like, Ultra Instinct Goku. His hair is white now.
Yeah.
I'm marking out. It's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
That Ultra Instinct. Did you ever see this... was it a meme or something? It was about what's his name, Michael B. Jordan,
uh-huh.
And he's into anime and that stuff. And they were suggesting he plays. There's a character that he'd be perfect for. Is there a character in Dragon Ball Z that he could play?
Sure,
like all of them.
Right.
See, Michael B. Jordan as like
how about
as
Goku?
Any character as Goku? Like that'd be awesome. He'd make a cool Piccolo, I think. He'd make a cool...
I have to look that up.
Like, after his performance as Killmonger, make him Frieza. I don't know. Like
that. Maybe that's awesome. Let me see. Yeah. That's what they said.
So.
I tried to watch some anime recently, but what do you think, if other people are interested in just checking it out. What's some starter anime?
Starter. I mean, I got to go with Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Uh-huh. Just start with Brotherhood. It's better than the original. It's kind of like 63 episodes long. That's good. Ghost in the Shell, standalone complex.
Okay.
Yeah, seasons 1 and 2. Just get that, all of that. That's 26 episodes apiece.
Helsing
is good. Helsing, I do love Helsing, and of course Cowboy Bebop. Would not be an anime fan if I didn't mention Cowboy Bebop.
Afro Samurai.
I couldn't.
Afro Samurai. Yes. Samurai Shampoo. Black Lagoon. Black Lagoon's a little
Cowboy
much.
Cowboy Bebop. I couldn't figure it out. I was like, oh, I don't think I understand it.
A lot of the animes is just like, I don't know what happened.
I don't know
what's
going on. Right. Well, because, I mean, the first anime I watched was this thing called Inuyasha or something.
Yeah.
And I watched that and I was really into it because there was all this sort of ghosts and devils and spirits and stuff. And so I got into that.
You like Helsing.
Helsing's
good.
Afro Samurai because it has Samuel Jackson. And
okay.
Right.
And they got like the two movies and they got the series. Yes.
But so props to Goku for getting that complete Ultra Instinct, that Miga Tenno Gokui. Watching that sub. Yeah.
Earning the nerd cred over here.
Nerd! Book
Love
slam!
It. Love it. Drop the anime mic. So, stuff I'm nerding out on. I'm late to the game, but I've just been really liking Elder Scrolls Online. I've been playing that a lot. It's like a fantasy genre game set in like a fictional land with fucking like dragons and shit. It's sort of like based on, I guess, Viking mythology if you had to draw something to it. But there's all different types of cultures that you can find. They draw from history and there's magic and all this shit. And, you know, like all the adventure stuff is not really what interests me. I just want to be like a tailor. I just want to like make dresses and some like furniture.
Not armor.
I want to be a carpenter. Armor is all right, but I really just want to make some better, like some nice clothing. I want to be a shmata in the Jewish tradition, as they call it.
What race is your character?
A Nord, Ebon Heart Pact build. She's just like, just a general Skyrim style character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
My character's like a female Khajiit, like cat person.
Yeah,
like
the cats are cool.
She's like a dragon warrior, so I'm going to have to come and buy some clothes from you.
Oh my God. I am not playing this.
What do you play on?
What was that?
What do you play on? Xbox, PC?
Oh, Xbox One. Yeah.
Yeah, we're
going
to have
to make
it. See, I'm a PS4 person.
The other thing I'm geeking out on, we just finished this series called Altered Carbon on Netflix, which is like a sci-fi film.
I started watching that.
That has like a pretty shitty script and like mostly shitty acting, but like the way that the whole like universe is set up is really fucking cool. I kind of really dug that. So that was pretty cool. And also I just discovered Black Lightning, the animated series from BET, so I've been watching that.
Black Panther.
I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah, Black Panther. Yeah.
You're about to watch Black Lightning.
I am. I'm going to catch up on that. All right. Yeah.
I was just going to say. So
what do you got going on, Janae?
Okay.
Plugs.
Every Tuesday at Oscar Blues Black Buzzard Room downstairs, I run an open mic. That's sign up at 9. Starts at 9:30. It's kind of hard to do. It's a lot of comics there, and I'm super tired, but, you know, I try to make sure everybody gets up. You get
like
3 minutes.
Cats.
Huh?
Like herding cats?
Well, everybody's waiting their turn, and it's not a great audience.
Yeah.
What I'm getting, though, now is more staff is coming through to support, and I really love that. Mm-hmm. But open mics are hard, and I just want people to get it down to their 3-minute tight, say something funny, and get the fuck off the stage type of thing. That's Tuesdays. I love that room. Thursday, I'm doing – it's International Women's Month, so I'm working with this group called Moxie, and we're going to be doing a show. It's called Make Your Mark Walkthrough. Oh, Make Your Mark is what it's called. It's at the McNichols Building. And I'm doing this other thing called That's What She Said. And that's on the Thursday the 9th. You know what? Friday the 9th. Actually, you know what? Go to JanaeBurris.com. I got a website. That's much easier that way.
Yeah. And you got your calendar updated on the website?
It's pretty good. I'm getting more jobs. And I got emails coming in right now. And it's nice that people are reaching out. But, you know... I need some more money in my life. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Is this therapy, Brad? Ask me why I'm doing comedy. You never ask me why I'm doing... No, I'm
why are you doing comedy, Janae?
because I'm not good at anything else.
Janae is very, very, very good at comedy. I highly recommend you see her live.
I'm sick of being poor. I got all this work, and I'm still poor.
Go give Janae some money, because she deserves it. She'll earn it. She works hard for it.
And love, not just money.
That's right. And love and money.
No, I don't give a shit about love. Don't put that out there. Well, yeah. I said money.
Money's the first priority. My if you can also spare a little love. Love.
I don't need your love. I'll just take your money, please.
Awesome. So if you're in Denver, go see Janae Burris live. Go to JanaeBurris.com. You can see where she's going to be playing in Denver. Go check out her open mic at Oscar Blues. So if you check us out on Insta and Twitter at NerdAF Show, definitely submit what your Chillin' Like a Villain ideas are. We'd love to hear your input on what you think the supervillains we picked would be doing if they were chilling, or if you had any other villains going on. Share that out with us at Twitter. And also, if you want to submit your ideas for new games we can play, like Chillin' Like a Villain, submit those ideas to us as well. Help us grow this thing. We want you to be engaged and involved as we go along. This podcast is our first one, so we're going to need your help to really get the word out there. Come check us out on Insta and on Twitter and on Facebook at NerdAFShow. And definitely download this on podcast. Most importantly, please review this on iTunes or Stitcher and any of the places that you get your podcasts. Reviewing a podcast is what's going to get us out to the most amount of nerds possible. And, of course, we want them to hear our brilliant nerd conversations. So check us out at Nerd AF Show. Thank you for listening.
All right. Nerd AF is a production of F420 Films. This week's episode was produced by Vince Chandler and Andy Caldwell. We are hosted, as we always are, by Brad Bogus, Hugh Johnson, and Richard Williams. Our guest this week was Janae Burris. Again, find us at Nerd AF Show anywhere you need to. Peace.